to 103.1 FM and 980 AM WPFP Park Falls. This is Trail Mix 103.1.
This week on Viewpoint.
It was just like throwing a bomb into the educational system. It quickly ruined so much, and they've taken no responsibility for this.
Are students using AI to cheat their way through school? Then
we think of JFK and we think of RFK. We think of the Kennedys of the past and the roles that they played and the tragedies that they've faced.
Uncovering the Kennedys you've heard little about. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
At Charmin, we heard you shouldn't talk about going to the bathroom in public, so we decided to sing about it.
Light a candle, pour some wine. Grab a roll, the soft kind for a little me time. Charmin Ultra Soft Smooth Tear. Wavy edges for my rear. So let the softness caress your soul. Just relax, you're on a roll. Let her rip. Charmin Ultra Soft Smooth Tear.
Charmin Ultra Soft Smooth Tear has the same softness you love. Now with wavy edges that tear better than the leading one-ply brand. Enjoy the go with Charmin.
Progressive knows when you're in your RV, you're already on vacation. That's when you become vacation you, who just camped where there's absolutely no shade. Even though regular you burns easily. In fact, vacation you burns too, but is too stubborn to admit it, which is why regular you gets in trouble at the dermatologist because vacation you doesn't do doctors. So bundle your RV with your home or auto policy and earn an automatic discount from Progressive. And spend the savings on the both of you. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Not available in all states or situations.
In high schools, colleges, and universities across the country, educators are facing an epidemic, a cheating epidemic. With generative AI tools like Gemini, Claude, and most notably ChatGPT easily accessible, it's an uphill battle to get students to stay focused, let alone do their homework. While ChatGPT has only been publicly available for a few years, it's already done tremendous damage to the education system. Michael Long, a high school English teacher in the Chicago suburbs, estimates that 30 to 40% of his students use AI to do the brunt of their work for them, and it's only getting harder to tell what's written by a human and what's not.
And at the beginning, it was pretty clear to tell what was written with AI and what wasn't, whereas now, in the stage that ChatGPT is at, you can still generally tell, but it's much harder to discern.
As ChatGPT use becomes more frequent and more problematic, teachers and professors have put in place policies restricting AI usage. One tactic that's become popular is the use of blue books for in-class quizzes and exams. These simple books pose open-ended questions, forcing students to handwrite a longer answer that shows their unique thought process. In Long's classroom, his policy is that AI tools are strictly off-limits for major projects. But for smaller assignments, it's sometimes allowed to help with items like structuring a paper or checking grammar, as long as AI isn't doing all the work. While he recognizes that AI can be helpful, it's easy to abuse. Overall, he's seen a concerning decline in student engagement and work ethic.
I'd say students are a little less engaged. I think knowing that they have this tool to fall back on, it kind of lowers the stakes of maybe major assignments, major assessments, and they maybe feel like they don't have to tune in as deeply or as thoroughly as before. And especially in my subject of English, students are starting to lose sight of the value of reading and writing, which is kind of crazy to think. But if there's this machine that can do all their reading and writing work for them, some students might think, why should I spend my time learning these skills?
High school is a crucial time for students to develop their critical thinking skills and expand on reading and writing comprehension. Long is concerned that students who depend on AI to write essays or understand reading assignments won't be prepared for the demands of college-level work. In high school, it's easier for teachers to identify when a person is struggling and get them more help. In college, that support is much harder to provide.
I think that students are becoming a little bit more prone to taking a quick or easy way out of an assignment instead of putting in some hard or rigorous work to get to the learning. And so in high school, our job is to do everything to make sure that our students are learning and don't fail. So I do get concerned for college, where the professors maybe don't really care as much if students pass or fail. And so they'll get to this higher education level and maybe won't be able to do the high level work that's being demanded of them.
And colleges are seeing this already. Brian Green, Director of Technology Ethics at the Markula Center for Applied Ethics at Santa Clara University, has also noticed big shifts in his classroom since the launch of ChatGPT. Similar to Long, he's seen shorter attention spans and less engagement. But he's even more concerned about the long-term impact of students graduating school without the skills they need to succeed.
One of the things I like to tell my students is, if they've been using AI to replace them in school, they should be prepared to be replaced by AI in the workplace, because ultimately they're writing themselves out of their own education. And by doing that, they're kind of writing themselves out of their own job. Ultimately, they need to be able to think for themselves. That's the reason that people get hired for doing things, is because they have talents, not because they can just get AI to do everything for them.
A recent Wall Street Journal survey found that 89% of college students have used ChatGPT to complete a homework assignment. Not only is this bad for individuals, but it has broader societal implications. What happens when a generation of doctors, engineers, and scientists use AI to cheat through critical parts of their training?
People need to grow up. People need to be able to fulfill those roles in society. If we don't have enough people to get society to operate, then society starts deteriorating. If we don't get enough doctors who know what they're doing, then you get more medical mistakes. If you don't get enough electrical engineers or electricians or other people who can make the electrical grid work, then you're going to have blackouts. If you don't get enough people who know how the sewage system works or the water system works, then you're going to have problems with those systems. And ultimately, society just starts falling apart. We need to raise up individuals who can replace the older generation. As the older generation gets old and retires and eventually is not around anymore to run the world, we need to make sure that young people are equipped to step into those places.
Green adds that it's important for students to step up and realize the value of really learning and understanding the material. However, they're not the only ones that need to take accountability. As a tech ethicist, he believes that OpenAI, the parent company of ChatGPT, and other developers should do more to restrict student access to their platforms.
OpenAI released ChatGPT right before finals, you know, just a couple years ago, and right before college essays were due for people who were applying to college. And it was just like throwing a bomb into the educational system. It quickly ruined so much, and they've taken no responsibility for this. This is something that they caused. It should be something that they try to clean up. They have not tried to clean it up. They've done some tiny little attempts, but if anything, they're trying to make it worse by selling their stuff as something that's useful for educational purposes. And in some cases it is, it can be useful for education, but for the most part, it's really just a kind of a mess that they've created.
Some potential benefits include writing assistance, like Long uses in his classroom, as well as virtual tutoring and exam prep. But before ChatGPT and other software can become truly effective tools for learning, Green says there need to be some major changes.
What I would like to see happen is some sort of restriction which says that you can't use AI for particular kinds of assignments, or you can't access AI unless you have a reason to be accessing it. Or there's got to be some centralized database that's collecting all of these responses so that you can check what's turned in class with what was made by a generative AI system. There are a lot of solutions here. Nobody seems to be interested in it because what they're trying to do is make money, and they are going to try to sell this as much as they can. And it doesn't matter if the student's cheating with it or not, as long as they're making money as a company.
Considering OpenAI reportedly made $3.7 billion in revenue last year, Green isn't optimistic they or other tech companies will step in. In the meantime, he's replaced written assignments with 10-minute conversations with each student in his class. And even in the long run, putting up guardrails against AI misuse may be destined to fail unless young people understand the benefits of taking the hard road. Green argues that the most effective solution is to make students actually want to learn.
The main thing to do is to remember why you're in a university in the first place. If you're a student, you should have a sense of goal orientation, that you need to learn this material if you're going to go forward in your life. So keep your eyes on what you're there for. If there are other people cheating around you, then try to explain to them, you know, this is not good for you. You're wasting your education. This is not what life is all about. If you're a teacher, you should be making the same argument, right? Which is that this is ultimately not what your education is for.
To find out more about Michael Long, Brian Green, and all our featured guests, visit viewpointsradio.org. For more behind the scenes, check out Viewpoints Radio on X, Facebook, and Instagram. This segment was written and produced by Grace Galante. Our executive producer is Amira Zaveri. Studio production by Jason Dickey. I'm Gary Price.
Coming up, from poor Irish immigrants to a generational dynasty, the Kennedy legacy, when Viewpoints returns.
Father's Day is Sunday, and if you haven't found a gift yet, don't panic. Just come to Macy's Father's Day sale for gifts that'll make dad say, "This is perfect." Shop designer polos from Lacoste and Tommy Hilfiger, 30 to 50% off. Watches from Citizen and Bulova, 30% off. Fragrance gift sets, boxed and ready to give. Even a 36-piece Cuisinart grill set, now half off. Hurry in. Father's Day is this Sunday, and this sale is happening now at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Another checkup? Why are so many people getting new puppies?
Dr. Kim's veterinary office is littered with cuteness.
We are booked solid for weeks, but who can say no to a puppy, right? Oh, good boy. Oh, sure.
She needs to find extra vet techs to get those pups some extra love.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. When you sponsor a job on Indeed, candidates can find it easier, so you can hire easier. Redeem your $75 credit at Indeed.com/credit. Terms and conditions apply.
Thy ticket, Lady Jennifer of Coolidge.
Well, many thanks, good sir. Heareth my Discover card.
They accept Discover at Renaissance fairs?
Yeah, they do here. Discover is accepted at the places that I love to shop. Getteth with the times.
With the times? You're playing the lute.
Yeah, and it sounds pretty good, right?
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2024 Nielsen report.
Sometimes I struggle to get to sleep. My body stopped for the day, but my mind is still running. So I take ZzzQuil.
ZzzQuil, the world's number one sleep aid brand, has a range of non-habit-forming products to fit you and your family's needs. Invest in a great night's sleep for the best you tomorrow.
I'm awake and ready to take on anything.
Better days start with ZzzQuil Nights. Explore our products at ZzzQuil.com. Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
It's been more than 60 years since President John F. Kennedy was assassinated. Despite only serving in office for 3 years, JFK is one of the most popular presidents in American history. The young, stylish icon had a natural knack for politics, leadership, and represented a sense of country and idealism that inspired millions. But these traits alone weren't what propelled JFK into the public sphere. The Kennedy name was a big driving force in the 20th century. To be a Kennedy meant you were destined for big things. The prominent East Coast family was known across the nation for their dominance in business, public service, and politics. Today, the Kennedy name still perseveres in American politics. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the nephew of President John F. Kennedy, was recently appointed and confirmed as the U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services.
They were raised with this sensibility that they are here to serve, to give back. They were all born wealthy. Joe was born wealthy. His kids were born extremely wealthy. So they didn't necessarily need to work, at least not, you know, a regular job. I think their sense of what they could and should do with their lives was to give back in different ways, whether politically or otherwise.
That's Neil Thompson, a journalist and the author of The First Kennedys, The Humble Roots of an American Dynasty. Thompson says that it's no secret that the family has dealt with their fair share of past controversies and tragedies.
There are a lot of things you can criticize. There are a lot of flaws. They, you know, many of them exhibited their flaws very publicly across time. But the one thing they did do is give back and serve, and in particular with a focus on those in need. I do think the Kennedys did have a sense of helping those who needed help.
While public service is a key trait of their legacy, another aspect is the classic image of this elite family. Many portraits display large get-togethers where everyone is dressed to the nines, enjoying parties or summer getaways along the picturesque beaches of the East Coast. This was especially true in the 20th century, when the family commanded immense recognition, power, and privilege. However, it wasn't always this way. So much has been covered about the Kennedys at their peak. But how did they get there? Who started it all? It's rarely mentioned that the Kennedy name, just a few generations before JFK, meant nothing. The first descendants, Bridget Murphy and Patrick Kennedy, were simply poor Irish immigrants seeking a better life. Thompson says the couple both grew up in rural southeastern Ireland and had spent much of their lives working in agriculture. But when the potato famine hit Ireland in 1845 and continued to worsen, life became very hard.
For Bridget Murphy and Patrick Kennedy, they were slightly better off than some of the other farm families across the island, especially in the West, which got hit harder by the potato famine. But still, it upended their lives completely, for sure. They did sort of live under the threat of eviction. I found evidence that their landlord was a little bit more gracious than some others and didn't threaten to kick them out when they were a little bit late on the rent, which happened often. But it did trigger early on, and then increasingly over the late 1840s, this mass escape from Ireland. And Bridget and Patrick were part of that escape.
While the U.S. was a symbol of hope and great opportunity, many fleeing refugees faced a different reality upon arrival. In the mid-19th century, there was a lot of anti-Irish sentiment as hundreds of thousands of Irish immigrants flooded into America. Bridget and Patrick were just a couple of many who chose to settle down in Boston. Bridget began working as a maid, while Patrick became a barrel maker. But it wasn't a comfortable life by any means. Poverty and disease ran rampant.
So Bridget and Patrick lived in East Boston, married in 1849, started raising a family, had two daughters, but then lost their first son, the first John F. Kennedy, who died at 20 months because many of the neighborhoods where these Irish immigrants lived were unhygienic and full of disease, and people died in very large numbers, children and adults. In fact, the life expectancy for first generation child of an Irish immigrant was 5 years. And in Bridget's case, she raised three daughters, lost her first son at 20 months, but managed to have another son, PJ, and kept all four of those children alive beyond that 5 year terrible life expectancy.
Bridget's other children survived these conditions, but her husband Patrick died in 1858 from tuberculosis at the age of 35. Now a widow and single mother of four, she worked hard to provide for her family. Over the next 10 years, she climbed the ladder at different jobs, learning several new skills along the way.
In time, decided to go into business for herself, and she opened her own grocery store sometime around the end of the Civil War in East Boston, which was truly a remarkable feat because there weren't many female business owners at that time, and even fewer were female Irish immigrant widows. So for her to open her own business and have that business succeed, a business that she owned for the rest of her life, caps off this remarkable ascent for this woman who came poor with nothing, faced hardship after hardship with the loss of her son and then her husband, but shows this ambition and grit and tenacity and savvy and becomes kind of a community fixture. In time, she was able to buy the building where her grocery store was occupied and then bought the building next to that and became, remarkably to me, a landlord, leasing out the apartments above to incoming Irish immigrants. Two of those immigrants became her sons-in-law. So she became a very well-known and trusted and respectable neighborhood business leader.
From nothing, Bridget was able to carve out a name in America for her children and future generations. One of her sons, PJ Kennedy, would go on to be a successful businessman and prominent Massachusetts politician, beginning the Kennedys' long reign in politics.
His success really does set the family up for what is about to come in the 20th century. You know, other histories of the Kennedys focus on Joe Kennedy, JFK's father, RFK's father, and the successes that he had in business. But it really all started with PJ, you know, not just his political success, but his business success, and not just in the saloon and liquor business, but he went into banking, he got involved in real estate, he was part owner of a coal company. He was just wildly successful at anything he got involved in and gave those skills to his son, Joe, who chose not to get involved in politics, but was a huge success in business, and then in turn pushed his own children to get involved in politics or public service.
One of those children he pushed was John F. Kennedy, who would become a U.S. senator and then president in 1961. While the Kennedy men had many triumphs, it's important to remember that without the perseverance of Bridget Murphy Kennedy, the Kennedy name would be far less predominant today. To find out more about this topic and our guest, Neil Thompson, visit viewpointsradio.org. Also, check out his book, The First Kennedys, The Humble Roots of an American Dynasty, available online and in bookstores now. For more behind the scenes, visit viewpointsradio.org. This segment originally aired in April 2022 and was written and produced by Amira Zavery. Our studio manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Marty Peterson.
Viewpoints returns in just a moment.
On your period, sudden gushes happen without warning. But now you can say goodbye to stand-up gush fears. Thanks to Always Ultra Thins with Rapid Dry technology. It absorbs gushes 2 times faster than the leading store brand and gives you up to 100% leak-free protection. Hello clean and comfortable. With Always, fear no gush.
Still getting around to that fix on your car? You got this. On eBay, you'll find millions of parts guaranteed to fit. Doesn't matter if it's a major engine repair or your first time swapping your windshield wipers. eBay has that part you need, ready to click perfectly into place. For changes big and small, loud or quiet, find all the parts you need at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit every time. But you already know that. eBay. Things. People. Love. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This is Viewpoints Explained. I'm Ebony McMorris. Americans are more hopped up on caffeine than ever. Whether it's coffee or energy drinks, there are endless brands and brews to choose from. Energy drinks in particular have grown in popularity over the last 10 years among adolescents, young adults, and middle-aged adults. Many of these beverages come in a variety of fruity flavors and often build themselves as clean energy. But just how much caffeine lies inside? Bang Energy packs 300 milligrams of caffeine into 16 fluid ounces. That one serving equals about 3 cups of caffeine. Another popular brand, Celsius, offers a special variety called Celsius Heat, which has 300 milligrams of caffeine, but in a smaller 10-ounce serving. The drink is marketed as a great pre-workout option for gym-goers. The takeaway? Many of these newer energy products are normalizing a higher caffeine intake to keep consumers hooked. For instance, Red Bull, which has been sold in the U.S. since 1996, only has 111 milligrams of caffeine per 12 ounces. That's much lower than what's in a regular can of Celsius or Prime. For the average adult, the Food and Drug Administration recommends a max amount of 400 milligrams of caffeine per day. Consuming more than this can cause harsh side effects like anxiety, jitters, headaches, and heart palpitations. Currently, there's no formal cap on how much caffeine manufacturers can add into one drink. So, the next time you need a little pick-me-up, make sure to check the label. The caffeine content is usually listed on the side right next to the nutrition info. That's Viewpoints Explained for this week. More in a moment.
Welcome to Culture Crash, where we examine what's new and old in entertainment. Do you have a Letterboxd account? Do you know what a Letterboxd account is? In case you don't know, Letterboxd is an online film cataloging app similar to Goodreads, but for tracking movies instead of books. As of January of this year, Letterboxd has more than 17 million users on its app, making lists, giving star ratings, and logging the date they watch movies in their diary. I am, of course, one of those 17 million users, having meticulously maintained my own Letterboxd since 2016. There are many joys of using an app like Letterboxd or Goodreads, including the amount of discovery they can provide. I've spent many a rainy day trolling around Letterboxd, finding users with similar movie tastes as mine, and then looking at what their favorite movies are to fill in some blind spots in my viewing history, whether that means seeking out an old noir film or an 80s movie from Peter Weir. Every Letterboxd profile can display four favorites at the top of their page, and the app itself has sent correspondence to film premieres and award shows in recent years to ask actors and filmmakers what their four favorites are. For example, Ethan Hawke shouted out Do the Right Thing, Paris, Texas, Reds, and All That Jazz, while Iowa Debris' top four includes The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Notting Hill, Phantom Thread, and Babe. Now, I'm not suggesting this is need-to-know knowledge for anyone to have, but I'd be lying if I said I didn't find it interesting, and if it didn't make me want to finally see Reds or go rewatch Phantom Thread. And that's the beauty of Letterboxd. You can go in to log what you just watched and then log out with three more things you want to watch soon. I'm Evan Rook.
Father's Day is Sunday, and if you haven't found a gift yet, don't panic. Just come to Macy's Father's Day sale for gifts that'll make dad say, "This is perfect." Shop designer polos from Lacoste and Tommy Hilfiger, 30 to 50% off. Watches from Citizen and Bulova, 30% off. Fragrance gift sets, boxed and ready to give. Even a 36-piece Cuisinart grill set, now half off. Hurry in. Father's Day is this Sunday, and this sale is happening now at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
And that's Viewpoints for this week. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more about upcoming shows and find a library of past programs on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and more information about our guests at viewpointsradio.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Viewpoints.
Father's Day is Sunday, and if you haven't found a gift yet, don't panic. Just come to Macy's Father's Day sale for gifts that'll make dad say, "This is perfect." Shop designer polos from Lacoste and Tommy Hilfiger, 30 to 50% off. Watches from Citizen and Bulova, 30% off. Fragrance gift sets, boxed and ready to give. Even a 36-piece Cuisinart grill set, now half off. Hurry in. Father's Day is this Sunday, and this sale is happening now at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Here's to experiencing it all this summer in Wisconsin. Every deliciously cheesy, rockin', magical, fireworks-filled, festival-loving moment. There's Cheese Curd Fest in Ellsworth, Strawberry Fest in Cedarburg, Festival of the Arts in Stevens Point, and the Renaissance Fair in Bristol. Honor the Earth Powwow in Hayward, Mile of Music in Appleton, Venetian Fest, Bratfest, Summerfest. So many fests for your whole crew. Find them all at TravelWisconsin.com. Sponsored by Travel Wisconsin.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight and tomorrow, mostly cloudy. Isolated showers and thunderstorms. Low tonight around 50. High tomorrow close to 70. Monday looks partly sunny and warmer. Muggy as well, with scattered showers and thunderstorms and highs within a few degrees of 80. Right now it's 53.
You're listening to Radio Health Journal, the trusted news source for medicine, science, and technology. I'm Elizabeth Westfield.
I'm Mayan Vosta-Betancourt.
And I'm Greg Johnson. This week, a test that accelerates care for patients with rheumatoid arthritis.
I would have been able to maybe get a diagnosis and not wait till it was so inflamed that I had trouble walking and getting out of bed and holding a cup of coffee with one hand.
But first, a potential solution to make our food supply safe and healthy.
The post-market authority and review is slow, sporadic, it's not comprehensive, and it's definitely not rigorous, and it's not responding to the science.
All that and more this week on Radio Health Journal.
Do you have three ex-wives and your current trophy wife wants a life insurance policy three times the size of the policies you had to purchase for your previous mistakes? If so, you need to call Big Lou at Term Provider, 800-859-3220. Big Lou is intimately familiar with your problems, and if you're 50 to 60 years old and in reasonably good health, a $1 million policy should only cost about $100 to $200 per month. Big Lou may have a solution for your previous policies as well. You may even save enough money to lighten the load on your new $1 million policy. Remember, call Big Lou. He's like you. Except he's only on number two. Call Term Provider at 800-859-3220. That's 800-859-3220 for $1 million in term life insurance that you can live with. Call Big Lou at 800-859-3220. 800-859-3220.
The FDA has undergone some major changes recently, including the layoffs of thousands of employees and budget cuts. And as you've heard from our recent segment with FDA researcher Daniel Aaron, the agency had already been struggling to fulfill all of its responsibilities before these most recent challenges. In fact, the organization has a long history of searching for patchwork solutions that don't use extra resources. One popular move is called the GRAS list, which stands for Generally Recognized as Safe. It's a collection of substances that don't need a formal pre-market review because qualified experts have agreed they're safe within the context of their intended use. While it helps reduce some burden from the FDA, Jennifer Pomerantz says it's created a loophole where food companies can self-determine that an additive is considered GRAS without ever notifying the FDA.
The food industry is required to submit a petition for the FDA to review food additives and color additives. However, they can just opt to put in ingredients that they've determined are generally recognized as safe or GRAS. There is no requirement that the industry even run that by the FDA and say, should this be a food additive or should this be GRAS? The industry can just determine for itself that, oh, we've decided this is a GRAS ingredient. They're supposed to engage in scientific research to confirm that it's generally recognized as safe. But there's no requirement that they actually show this data to the FDA or even tell the FDA that they're adding these ingredients to food.
Pomerantz is a public health lawyer and associate professor at the NYU School of Global Public Health. She notes that the GRAS loophole has had a giant footprint in our country. A 2022 analysis by the Environmental Working Group estimates that nearly 99% of new food chemicals have used this policy workaround since the year 2000.
So that's concerning because there is no oversight or even knowledge of some of the ingredients in our food supply. And remember, if they want to submit the food additives petition, then that's kind of their decision whether they're going through that food additives framework or GRAS framework. There is no regulation telling them which one they have to choose. So a lot of these decisions are being left to industry.
There is a post-market review process that's designed to catch any harmful products that may have slipped through the cracks. However, Pomerantz says that the agency doesn't actually have the resources needed to make this system effective.
Even though they have the full authority, they don't have the resources to engage in that post-market review. And what we see as a result is that ingredients with known evidence of harm, decades of evidence of harm, remain in our food supply where the FDA is not removing it. There are many examples, industrial trans fat, which was removed very recently, there were 30 years of evidence that it was harmful. BVO, which is brominated vegetable oil, was in the food supply for 53 years, and there was evidence of harm back then.
BVO is a food additive that's been used in drinks since the 1920s to prevent the flavor oils from separating. It was added to the original GRAS list, but was removed in the late 60s due to toxicity concerns. The FDA states that there wasn't enough data to fully remove the additive from the market, so the agency limited its use level in products. Still, it took more than 40 years after this decision to gather enough data for the FDA to finally revoke the use of BVO in 2024. Companies now have 1 year to reformulate, relabel, and sell the rest of their products that contain BVO before the rule is enforced.
The post-market authority and review is slow, sporadic, it's not comprehensive, and it's definitely not rigorous, and it's not responding to the science. Also, what it's not responding to is when Europe is removing ingredients from their food supply, there should be some type of effort immediately on the U.S. to say the default should be maybe we should look at this ingredient as well, but we haven't been doing that.
Again, the slow action isn't a purposeful move to keep dangerous ingredients in our food. It's a harmful side effect of minimal resources and funding. Experts like Pomerantz believe that many of these failings can be improved if the food industry started paying a sort of tax to the FDA called user fees. The tobacco and pharmaceutical industries both pay user fees. In fact, these dues account for nearly half of the FDA's current budget.
There are user fees for every type of human drug. There are user fees for animal drugs, and there's user fees for tobacco. The drug budgets, they're reauthorized every 5 years, which allows Congress to reevaluate and also, you know, see how they're working out. The way every single user fee is authorized is actually through Congress. So the agency can't do that unilaterally, but Congress will implement the user fee programs. But in general, the way the numbers are determined is actually through negotiations between the FDA and the industry trade groups.
It's a system that helps both parties. The FDA receives enough resources to effectively do its job, and the drug manufacturers get their products reviewed in an appropriate amount of time. However, a question that's often asked is how much room does this negotiation leave for corruption to take place?
It is a very common concern. The interesting thing is we did not see any indication that user fees ended up corrupting the FDA's ultimate judgment. User fees are only to pay for the process. So they basically pay for registration of companies, the process of reviewing applications. There's no guarantee on the outcome.
However, Pomerantz says that in general, there are instances of regulatory capture. This refers to a situation where the agency is accidentally influenced by the industries it's policing. As a result, the agency begins to act in ways that benefit the interests of the industries. While this does happen, Pomerantz says that it's not directly connected to the user fee system.
We see that as a problem across industries. For example, the food industry essentially polices itself, and there are really almost no user fees in the food context. So that industry capture of regulatory interests, that is happening like separate from user fees.
There are a couple of food-specific user fees currently in place, but Pomerantz says they only make up about 1% of the entire foods program budget, which in 2022 was just over $1 billion.
It's for color additives have a user fee. There are also user fees from the Food Safety Modernization Act, and these are things for recall or reinspection. The FDA actually doesn't collect those user fees, even though they're authorized to do so. The reason is they said that they wouldn't collect them until they issued a small business guidance, which actually helped small businesses either reduce their fees or be able to abide by the fees in an easier way. The FDA hasn't issued that small business guidance, so it doesn't collect the user fees that it's allowed to collect. Then there's a voluntary user fee program for different, very small parts of the FDA's oversight as well. So that's where that 1% is coming in, from these voluntary programs and then the color additives. But really, that 1% is a minor drop, and it's not really funding the major operations of the FDA when it comes to food.
Pomerantz says the user fees are needed to fund more than the review of additives. There are countless processes that require oversight but aren't getting done in a timely manner, if at all. For example, if a new infant formula is introduced that has major changes to existing products, the FDA is notified and has 90 days to review that petition. At least that's what's supposed to happen. Pomerantz says they currently don't have the resources to meet that expectation.
they can't review it within 90 days. They don't have the resources to do it. So that also slows down the infant formula companies. And as I mentioned earlier, there's health claims that the companies want to put on their products, but because it takes a really long time for the FDA to review those, they don't get to put them on their products for years. So there are other areas where user fees will speed up these processes, and that is actually helping industry get to market quicker.
However, Pomerantz says this timeliness isn't a big enough incentive to bring the industry to the bargaining table, especially when they can already use the GRAS loophole to bring many other products directly to market.
Close the GRAS loophole for safety reasons, and then user fees are a really natural result of closing that GRAS loophole, because then the industry will want to make sure that they can get to market quick. And in order to do that quickly, the FDA will need user fees to fund those operations.
Pomerantz has a few ideas on how to close the loophole, one being that the FDA has to review the data establishing an additive as safe.
Which is not actually the worst idea, because we have so many ingredients already in the food supply. Anything new created is clearly not like something from nature. It would be an industrially created ingredient at this point, right? There are less rigorous ways. They could just notify the FDA of their determination that something is GRAS and also provide the science to the FDA. At least it would give the FDA the information that the FDA could review, but then they would still go to market after a certain period of days.
At the very least, the manufacturers could add the ingredients to a public database.
This would allow nonprofit organizations to review the evidence of safety, and also it would really keep the industry from putting in ingredients in the food supply where the evidence of safety does not support that it's safe, right? So if this is public data, they're not going to put in something that clearly the evidence doesn't support the safety. So that's not a bad idea. And it's also much less labor intensive, right, to put it on a public database.
Unfortunately, the FDA is in a tough spot at the moment. In order to bring the food industry to the bargaining table, they need to close the GRAS loophole. However, they need the resources to be able to do that, which would come from the user fees. Pomerantz says that instead of using regulation to force the industry's hand, Congress needs to step in to create change.
It's time for Congress to come in and close the GRAS loophole and then simultaneously require user fees. Or, you know, frankly, Congress can increase appropriations to the FDA. It would have a similar impact of giving them resources. The problem is that every year, the FDA will have to implore Congress to keep that appropriations up. So user fees are a little bit more of a stable funding stream. There are like dozens of user fees that the FDA gets, and they can model it after most of them. I can imagine more, you know, review, the petition review fees, it makes the most sense. You could have facility registration fees. There's a lot of fees they could put on. I mean, my goal here is to make our food supply safe and healthy ultimately, but safe here initially. So we don't need to nickel and dime the food industry. I want the fees should really just go to the FDA ensuring the safety of our food supply.
You can find more information about Jennifer Pomerantz and all of our guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org. For more behind the scenes, follow Radio Health Journal on Facebook, Instagram, and X. Our writer-producer is Kristen Farah. Our executive producer is Amira Zavari. I'm Elizabeth Westfield.
Coming up, the blood test that can put an end to trial and error medicine when Radio Health Journal returns.
Father's Day is Sunday, and if you haven't found a gift yet, don't panic. Just come to Macy's Father's Day sale for gifts that'll make dad say, "This is perfect." Shop designer polos from Lacoste and Tommy Hilfiger, 30 to 50% off. Watches from Citizen and Bulova, 30% off. Fragrance gift sets, boxed and ready to give. Even a 36-piece Cuisinart grill set, now half off. Hurry in. Father's Day is this Sunday, and this sale is happening now at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Sometimes I struggle to get to sleep. My body stopped for the day, but my mind is still running. So I take ZzzQuil.
ZzzQuil, the world's number one sleep aid brand, has a range of non-habit-forming products to fit you and your family's needs. Invest in a great night's sleep for the best you tomorrow.
I'm awake and ready to take on anything.
Better days start with ZzzQuil Nights. Explore our products at ZzzQuil.com. Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
Coming
Contrary to what you may have heard, it doesn't take 7 years to digest a piece of swallowed gum. It's funny how certain old wives' tales have been passed down so many times, people just accept them as fact. In Emma Larson's family, cracking your knuckles would most definitely lead to arthritis. She was constantly scolded as a kid by her mother and grandma, who both had rheumatoid arthritis. However, they didn't get it by popping their joints. The condition is an autoimmune disease where a person's immune system attacks its own tissue, causing inflamed and painful joints. Larson remembers watching her own mom suffer through the illness.
When she first started to work full-time again, she would come home and just like would be exhausted and have to sit down the second she got home. And I just never understood, but it was because her joints were in so much pain. So I never really thought that it would happen to me.
Larson grew up an athlete and committed to play volleyball in college. But going into her freshman year, pain had already begun settling into her hands.
I was getting ready for like preseason for volleyball, and I couldn't set a ball without almost crying because my knuckles hurt so bad. And so I went to doctors, different specialists.
Larson was tested for various conditions, such as lupus, but nothing showed up. They said her pain was probably from changes in the weather. So Larson continued with life as normal. But then Larson began her senior volleyball season in pain. Thinking it was just a lack of endurance, she'd hit the gym every night after practice. Unfortunately, the extra training didn't help, and things only got worse after graduation.
I took a trip to Puerto Rico with a few friends from college, and I feel like it was on that trip that I was like, oh no, something's seriously wrong. Because I remember just like not being able to walk in the morning, limping pretty much until like I could get my bones moving and like get used to like the movement, or even like laying out on the beach, then getting up and having to like walk again and move. Like it took a while for me to like feel like I could move without it hurting. But then I talked to my family and they were like, oh, it's the weather was so different there. It must be the weather again.
But as she settled into life back at home, the pain persisted.
And at my bartending job, like even bending down to get a beer from the cooler and then having to get back up, it was like a struggle. Like I didn't want to bend down to get a beer because it hurt too much to get back up.
That was the last straw. Larson saw a rheumatologist that confirmed she was in the beginning stages of rheumatoid arthritis. However, it was too early to diagnose the exact disease, so Larson's illness was officially identified as a general autoimmune condition. And though she was prescribed medication right away, there's no guarantee it's the right treatment.
I have to go every 2 or 3 months to get blood tests just to make sure the medicine's working and it's not progressing anymore, because then they would have to adjust the medicine. Because they really just kind of guessed with this medicine. They weren't sure it was going to work because they didn't know if I actually had rheumatoid arthritis. That was just their educated guess because these were my symptoms and my family history and my joints were inflamed in the tests. So I just have to keep going back to monitor it and make sure it's not changing or getting worse.
Which Dr. Sam Asgarian says is a common issue with rheumatoid arthritis patients. Asgarian is the vice president of clinical development at Guardant Health. He says at first, doctors can have trouble figuring out exactly where the problem is within a patient's body.
This isn't arthritis that's caused by the wear and tear of the joints, which is what the person will initially think, which is also what their doctor may initially think. This is arthritis that's caused by cells in the immune system attacking the same joints in that person's body. And that leads to a lot of different signs and symptoms that at first aren't easy to read.
And even after doctors are able to diagnose a condition as rheumatoid arthritis, they still have to guess at which medication will work without causing more harm.
It's hard to then figure out which part of their immune system is overreacting. And as a physician, you can't turn off someone's immune system, right? Because now they're susceptible to all kinds of viruses, bacteria, and other illnesses and diseases.
So they have to figure out a way to only fix the part that's overreacting while keeping the rest of the patient's immune system intact.
That makes it really difficult. That ultimately is why in the world of autoimmune, you see physicians practicing trial and error medicine. That's not ideal, right? That means I want to try this. If it works, great. If not, well, we'll have to try something else. And the best way to solve that is by really practicing precision medicine or personalized medicine, finding out the molecular root cause of someone's disease and then prescribing a treatment that really focuses on just that root cause to give them that right outcome.
In an effort to give patients this option, a first-of-its-kind blood test has been created called PrismRA. It can detect which specific molecules are overreacting in a person's immune system.
So what our test PrismRA does is it looks for markers of inflammation at the gene level and basically says if those areas are what we see in the blood, that means that it's that part of the immune system that's overreacting.
The test is important because, as Garian says, rheumatoid arthritis, like other autoimmune diseases, isn't the same in every patient. There's slight variances person to person because everyone's immune system is different.
There's all these different components of the immune system. And the goal biologically is sometimes one branch overreacts and it's different in each person, right? So that's why it's called personalized or precision medicine, because you're not treating based on their diagnosis, which has a lot of variety. You're treating based on their individual biology. And therefore, you have the ability to be more targeted in your treatment because you know that particular part of their biology is what's overreacting. And your treatment is targeted to that area. And that's the hardest part to figure out without a blood test and without molecular information.
Which is exactly the type of information PrismRA is able to give to physicians.
It gives the doctor insight into something they can't see with their naked eye. The doctor will be able to see this months from now when those cells ultimately reach their joint that they're interested in attacking, and that leads to that person's issue. But our goal is to give them enough predictive information ahead of time through a simple lab test to where they can with confidence prescribe the right drug earlier than those symptoms actually present or progress.
A test Larson could have used when the pain was first in her hands. Even with her current medication, Larson's condition has slowly spread. As Garian says, Larson's issues are common in the autoimmune disease world. He explains that we've gotten really good at solving simple chronic problems, but that hasn't carried over into autoimmune research.
These diseases that are complex and they are chronic, sometimes they don't end up in death, but they do end up in disability or a lot of debilitation, and the quality of life comes down. The other issue that we see is a lot of wasted pharmaceutical spend, effort, and energy. People take drugs and they're taking them the way that their doctor prescribed them, but they're not working. They're not effective. And they know that. They feel like they're still getting sicker. And that is the burden that we're trying to relieve.
And with PrismRA, as Garian believes, we're one step closer to closing that gap. You can find more information about Emma Larson, Dr. Sam Asgarian, and all of our guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org. This segment originally aired in September of 2022. Our writer-producer is Kristen Farah. Our production manager is Jason Dickey. I'm Greg Johnson.
Radio Health Journal returns in just a moment.
Diabetes, high blood pressure, anxiety meds, everyone's on them. If you're a 50-year-old male, maybe a bit porky, and you may even have type 2 diabetes, $1 million of term insurance may only cost you about $200 a month. Call Term Provider. Speak with Big Lou at 800-859-3220. Big Lou will find a term life policy for you even if you have type 2 diabetes, are overweight, or have high blood pressure. Term Provider has helped thousands of people like you who think they can't afford term life insurance. To buy $1 million of affordable term life for you, all you need to do is call Big Lou at 800-859-3220. Lou will make sure the scales are tipped in your favor. Call 800-859-3220. Big Lou will answer your call and work to fit you into a term life policy that you can afford. Remember, Big Lou's like you. He's on meds too. Call 800-859-3220 or biglou.com.
Father's Day is Sunday, and if you haven't found a gift yet, don't panic. Just come to Macy's Father's Day sale for gifts that'll make dad say, "This is perfect." Shop designer polos from Lacoste and Tommy Hilfiger, 30 to 50% off. Watches from Citizen and Bulova, 30% off. Fragrance gift sets, boxed and ready to give. Even a 36-piece Cuisinart grill set, now half off. Hurry in. Father's Day is this Sunday, and this sale is happening now at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
With Progressive, it's easy to reach customer service with our app, website, chat, or by phone. Because when getting help is hard, it's not help at all.
Ugh. A little help.
A little help over here?
Thank you for calling Bench Press Assistance.
What?
Due to excessive gym volume, all available spotters are currently lifting heavy weights off the chests of other bench pressers.
Seriously?
Please continue to hold, and we will remove the barbell from your chest in the order in which your cry for help was received.
Getting assistance should be easy. With Progressive, it is. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
Medical notes this week. Is there a new brain region for our senses? Scientists have identified a little-known part of the brain that could be the key to how we sense the world around us. New research published in Cell Reports reveals that this region helps combine touch, sight, and sound into one unified experience. Scientists hope that learning more about this area could improve our understanding of neurological conditions that disrupt sensory processing, like autism. Why are so many adults feeling alone? A new study in Psychological Science shows that loneliness is on the rise among Americans in their 40s and 50s. The researchers believe the cause is the societal changes like delayed marriage, smaller families, and longer work hours. And it's not just an emotional threat. Loneliness can raise the risk of heart disease, stroke, and early death. And finally, can fish oil really slow down aging? A daily dose of omega-3 fatty acid could help delay the biological aging process. A study in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology has found that people with higher omega-3 levels showed slower marks of cellular aging. The findings suggest that eating more fatty fish or taking supplements could have long-term health benefits. And that's Medical Notes this week. I'm Mayan Vosta-Betancourt.
Do you have three ex-wives and your current trophy wife wants a life insurance policy three times the size of the policies you had to purchase for your previous mistakes? If so, you need to call Big Lou at Term Provider, 800-859-3220. Big Lou is intimately familiar with your problems, and if you're 50 to 60 years old and in reasonably good health, a $1 million policy should only cost about $100 to $200 per month. Big Lou may have a solution for your previous policies as well. You may even save enough money to lighten the load on your new $1 million policy. Remember, call Big Lou. He's like you. Except he's only on number two. Call Term Provider at 800-859-3220. That's 800-859-3220 for $1 million in term life insurance that you can live with. Call Big Lou at 800-859-3220. 800-859-3220.
Thank you for joining us this week and every week as we break down the science stories you need to know. You can find all of our past segments and guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and X for daily content. And tune in next week for another edition of Radio Health Journal.
Four out of five bears agree. For music, news, and information, it's Trail Mix 103.1. Thank you.
shine now.